We have a basketball program that we all expect to compete in the Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs in the Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you got me this good, but it feels good!
First, I need that national championship.
Welcome on into the boardroom. Johnny here alongside Josh and Sam. And your Fighting Illini have beaten the Syracuse Orange 73-44. A great triple-double performance from Coleman Hawkins. And a really beautiful, ugly basketball game. Josh, what were your thoughts?
The first half was pretty disgusting. Like, nothing was falling. We kept it way too close. And I think through like even like 25 to 30 minutes, we were shooting like an abysmal 40%, but for some reason we were still leading. You credit it to our offensive rebounds. I know that was you in response to my tweet there.
Yes.
But we were at one point like 1 for 7 from the free throw line and like 6 for like, I said 100, but it felt like 100 from three. But our shots weren't falling. We were still in the lead. So I guess besides the unbelievable performance, I'll be the first to say great performance by Coleman Hawkins. I feel like it was a fantastic win because even in the sloppiest of games, we can beat a Power 5 team by almost 30 points. Sam?
I was never really concerned. I thought they were not a great team. Didn't look great against Bryant. Not that I like watched the full game. So I kind of enjoyed us just messing around first half, chucking up some threes. Glad we got our act together second half. Very happy to see Coleman get a triple-double. Brad has shown that he will not sub someone out when they're on the triple-double path,
yes.
which I definitely appreciate.
Yeah, had those stats all the way. It was a little Westbrookian at the end when it was clear he needed like one or two rebounds, one or two assists. But you got to give credit for playing the first 35 minutes of the way, like really good team basketball. And I mean, yeah, I think we're all aware Syracuse is not good, but they're still like a Power 5 basketball team that you beat by 29 points and everyone's focused on the zone. You got to give some credit to the Illinois man-to-man defense that held them to 27.8% shooting. And they did for like, and along with the zone, the zone didn't shoot great against it. Like, we only turned the ball over 7 times, and like through the first 30 minutes of the game, it was like 3 times. So a lot of respect for them finally crashing the glass. It's nice to not be the team just letting up offensive rebounds every time and being the team that's collecting them. And I know that's kind of a function of the zone, but it was great to see that. Matthew Myers kind of struggled. It was good to see him get 3 offensive rebounds and saw him dive on the floor too, which like to see. I mean, it was not a good shooting performance. Shannon 5 for 17, Sky Clark 0 for 10, but I mean, those guys play defense, and I don't think anyone's going to be that upset with Terrence going 5 for 15. To me, this game, 5 for 15 from three, like, to me, this game kind of reminded me of like basketball and analytics and how sometimes like a three is worth more than two. And because we took 39 threes, like, we made 11 of them. So we had 33 points off of threes and Syracuse had 44 points. So there is something to be said about just like the announcers all game were like, Coleman Hawkins could take the 8-footer if it's there, but he wants to pass. And it's like, yeah, he's passing to open guys or shooting from three. Sometimes like the semi-open mid-range shot isn't a great shot, but the announcers kept pushing.
The announcer performance today was pretty poor. But what I will say is they are true. Like, beating a zone, you got to pass through it. You got to like drive into the paint, and you do eventually have those kicks. And while we just had more of just having like Coleman or Ty Rogers be standing at the top of the paint and just like kicking it out to whoever's open for three. They weren't when the score was a blowout, obviously whatever we were doing was working well. On top of Coleman, and you mentioned Meyer and TSJ, like, just, I think a big takeaway between, and we didn't have a podcast post Lindenwood, and we also didn't have one post Virginia, but a big takeaway from like the last two games with Lindenwood and this one is that RJ's kind of like getting back into what we saw towards the end of last year. He had 17 against Lindenwood, which isn't like a blowaway performance, but it's better than what he was performing like the last few games. And then I think today his final stat line was 15-6. So like he's finally putting shots together that are falling, and we going into a huge stretch these next two games coming up, having his confidence back is absolutely massive to where it was at the end of last year.
Amazing point. Yeah. That is an amazing point. And everyone was kind of down on him after the Vegas Classic, and he responded in a big way. And a lot of people are like, oh, the Underwood style of coaching, like it sounded like Brad was on him all week and he responded well in practice. So really enjoyed seeing that. Sam, what are your thoughts?
I did enjoy seeing 5 of 7 field goals come from three. He got I hate when ESPN like plays a video whenever you try and check a box score.
Oh, that's so frustrating. That's so frustrating.
I mean, I wasn't on ESPN, I memorized the stat line, but RJ definitely had like one or two moments where he was like trying to be Star J, but just catch and shoot.
Yeah.
Keep it simple, stupid.
And he physically carried the team shooting free throws. Like he went 7. He was the only guy who could actually make free throws going 7.
The free throw shooting has been.
Would you say that that's like your biggest? Night. Would you guys say that that's like right now the biggest concern that you guys have for this team going into Big Ten play? Like, is there anything else that you guys would say like you're like you can't sleep at night about?
It's up there for sure. I really have no idea how to solve that problem. Like, free throws are just free throws, but it is really up there.
I feel like we all have the same thought when it comes to Dane's free throws.
Oh God, the knees.
Like you're a 7-foot, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I saw this TikTok. So across like NBA, college, everyone, Elena Deladon is like the best free throw shooter ever by like a significant amount, like by 3%. And she like, I'm going to send you guys a video. She like doesn't move. That's what Dane should do.
So I think the same thought that we have is that Dane is a 6'10" person. He is a massive human being. His arms are probably strong enough where he does not need to bend as low as he bends down to shoot a free throw, but he still does it. I mean, everyone has their own rhythm. They do their own thing, but I mean, it has to work, right? Like it has to work in order for it to be your rhythm. So just change it up.
It is very similar to my golf swing, which also does not produce great results, which is a lot of movement and a lot of noise in the lower half. But yeah, one thing our buddy Bricker pointed out was that Dane, though, it takes so long for him that he's caused multiple lane violations. I think he's already caused 3 this year. So we're going to be calling those Dane violations, but
they're warm up free throws.
Yeah, exactly. And then he'll just proceed to miss the next one. But I was thinking for a while that might have been like on pace to be the worst between both teams free throw percentage wise when we were 1-7 and they were 7-15. Like how many like high major teams shoot that poorly together? But fortunately, we were able to clean up our act. Although Sam texted us beforehand saying, I'm not going to include Connor Servin's free throw in our totals.
But no offense to Connor Servin.
So great game all around. I would say we didn't recap. Well, I'm not going to say it. We didn't recap whatsoever. The end of the Vegas Classic here. And let's just say between a couple of us, things might have gotten testy in the stands, and it might have rolled out onto the Las Vegas Strip. I actually prepared a statement if we ever did have a post reaction. And so let's give some context here. So throughout the first game against UCLA, Coleman was in the first half of that game. Definitely. He was doing things that he didn't do tonight. He was trying to make an extra play that he didn't need to do. He was being a little bit too much. And from me personally, when I watch someone play in person, I always look at like what they do when they're not even on the court or like when they're not even holding the ball. I look at like their extra movements because I feel like that's what NBA and I guess for football players, NFL scouts, it's what you do when people aren't watching. And Coleman's always like during that game, I'll say, because I can't see when I'm not at the game. But Coleman's always like arguing with the refs based on certain plays. He's looking back at the coaches being like, that wasn't me. That wasn't me. I guess I can't read lips, so I'm just assuming things there. But you can see it based on his hand motions. But he was being a lot. The second game, I will say he toned it down a little bit, and he was obviously one of our better players, but it was still a little bit sloppy. And so I prepared a statement, I just mentioned Coleman there. That relates to RJ too during the first game, a little bit in the second game as well, and definitely Matthew Meyer in the second game. But the whole entire basis of this was based on expectations that these players had coming into the beginning of the season. Coleman, RJ, and Matthew Meyer were all three supposed to be fringe NBA prospects this year. And after that game, after the Virginia game, I thought that they didn't perform up to the level where it would be unreasonable to expect them to either take care of the ball, especially get rebounds, make other players better. I think there's a reason you see after each play, Brad is on their ass because he expects more onto them. And then because of that, it affects their next plays. All three during that Virginia game, this is not related to today's game, were pouting, they lose focus, and even sometimes their reactions impact the next play. TSJ, yes, had his worst game against Virginia, but he wasn't uncareful with the ball, and he was still trying to make a play, unlike complaining about the previous play. So that was my statement. And so the person that I was directing all of my anger towards and who was maybe Coleman's number one fan in Las Vegas was Johnny. So Johnny, response.
Yeah, so I guess just to give a little backstory, you could say we had our own little podcast one-on-one just debating the merits of the complaints regarding Coleman or other players. I would say for me, I was very passionate in Coleman's defense because he was making a lot of plays, especially in the second half of that Virginia game when everyone else, like other guys didn't play as well down the stretch. For example, the Virginia game. Yeah, and I mean, like, I don't want to spend the entire podcast, like, ragging on our guys for one loss against a Virginia right. team who's, like, a top five team in the country. Yeah. And, like, they make you look bad when you're playing them. But what I'll say about Coleman is he was in that game. I think he was their second leading scorer, second in assists. And he did not shoot the ball the last 4 minutes of the game. And what happened in the last 4 minutes of the game, we were leading at the under four, and then the game kind of fell apart. So it was like two Epps misses, two Danger misses, and RJ missed three, I think. Or no, sorry, not an RJ. Terrence missed three. And it seemed like a lot of the blame was going towards him and not other players on the team, not Melendez missing a defensive rotation that kind of ended the game. And we were kind of just going back and forth about the like just whether or not Coleman was a good player and whether or not it's fair to judge someone's body language and misdirect it, maybe because I don't know, sometimes it looks like they're pouting, but like you can't hear what they're saying. So we definitely didn't see eye to eye about that. I think Coleman's performance today vindicated a lot of his value, but he needs to be a consistent player game to game. Just like Taryn Shannon, who I don't think got enough, didn't get enough of the blame for the loss against Virginia. And once again, like, we shouldn't be blaming guys left and right. But what I will say is, like, Terrence right away, All-American comments or, like, IO comments. Like, you didn't see IO really have games like that in his career. Maybe once, which was the Loyola game, but, like, his junior year. Like, Terrence had 9 points and he had 6 turnovers, which, like, you didn't see Io doing that. He averaged 20 something points a game, which means, like, you're doing that game in, game out. I think he had one game in single figures in his junior year. So I think we need to recalibrate our expectations on a lot of those guys, including Terrence, of like, we've seen all American type performance from our best players. And maybe he's just going to be like a first team all Big Ten and like, once again today, 5 for 17, not like a amazing game, but still, like, we're never going to question Terrence's effort, which we really appreciate. And two, like Terrence probably was gassed because he played 39 minutes 2 days before. So once again, like there were some not great performances. Ultimately, we were winning against Virginia with a chance for it with 3 minutes left. So like, I feel like we can learn from that, move on. And like you talked about, like we're getting rid of the trust rankings online, partially because it's like, it's not fun to just like rag on college.
I agree.
At the end of the day, Coleman's not even 21. Coleman couldn't even gamble in Vegas. And so many of these guys are so young and they're going to make mistakes. And one guy that we haven't talked about over really this podcast is Sam's favorite player, Jaden Epps, who once again stepped up today and he played well against Virginia. And I'm really excited about him.
Live Hello, from the boys.
Oh,
someone got to hold of our Zoom link. Someone got to hold of our Zoom link.
Live. Y'all got to start putting the waiting rooms in on these things. You guys, you know, haven't you seen some of those videos of like the public office, like meetings being like Zoom bombed by these strangers? Yeah. Live
Iranians
from the parking lot at work.
Noses.
You know, I was watching a little bit of the first half. I had to turn it off at the like under 16, or it's like a 12-point lead. I just checked the score 10 minutes ago. I see that Coleman Hawkins had a triple-double and won by 30. Can someone update me on what we missed? I know everyone listening to this episode watched the game, I would presume.
And so listen to the first like 5 minutes of our podcast.
And listen to the first 5 minutes of the – I don't know where I am joining in the podcast. I don't know if we're talking – we've been talking for 20 minutes. I need to know, boys?
Well, you just missed our whole Vegas debate, but we'll get back to that. What you missed
is the debate
was
whether we should go back next weekend, because I vote no.
Johnny votes yes.
I know.
What you missed was Syracuse didn't have a person in double figures and they couldn't, so that means they couldn't shoot. And then we've kind of figured out how to shoot, even though we probably still shot at best 50%. Let me get the final. What was that final?
Well, we were 5 for 22 when I turned it off from three. So did someone start hitting threes?
Like
we finished 11 for 39. So like, we shot 33% the rest of the way.
So how do we end up winning by 29 when it was like Syracuse, a 12-point game?
Syracuse bad, Illinois good.
Okay, see, this is the kind of post-game insight that I know smart Illinois fans are looking for. Syracuse equals bad, Illinois equals good.
Syracuse shot 28% from the field, Maddie. So like they legitimately were not good. They turned the ball over 17 times. We had 17 offensive rebounds. Like Syracuse was not ready to play. And
Syracuse shot better. Syracuse shot 30% from three, which was better than their field goal percentage.
They shoot a lot of threes.
Yeah, that's also Johnny. Right? Johnny talked earlier about how like stats, like where we shot 39 threes and made 11 of them, so that's 33 points from three, and they had a total of 44 points. So three greater than two.
Again, this is the kind of insight that we're looking for. On a scale of 1 to 12.5, because that's what the spread was, how did we handle the zone? From 1 being the West Virginia game a couple of years back and 12
oh
being,
my God,
like we just drove through it.
I mean, we did well in terms of we didn't turn the ball over. We missed a lot of shots. There were some open threes that we missed. So on a scale of 1 to 12.5, probably like a decent like 7, but it was probably the ugliest 29-point win against an ACC team you'll see. Like a lot of people when they think about that game are going to be like, ugh, that was an ugly game. We did not play well. And then you take a step back and you're like, that was not some like cupcake game. That was still Power 5 team.
And that is the Big Ten ACC challenge game that we ride off into the sunset with for the rest of our lives, or at least for the foreseeable future, given that they're not renewing the deal. And so that is kind of going to be it's a good taste, I think, that's left in our mouths of, hey, like you can look back at the last Big Ten ACC challenge and maybe forget what happened in the game, but be like, we won by 30 points. Like, hell yeah, that's how we ended the Big Ten ACC challenge, like Big Ten on top. And I know that Johnny's going to be, and all of you guys are going to be rooting against the other Big Ten teams. And I haven't checked any of their scores yet. But I'd imagine the Big Ten is probably going to rake this year.
It's definitely kind of a bummer that it's the last Big Ten ACC challenge. Like, right when we get good, now they're just stopping doing them. Like,
well, they'll be like the Big Ten. They're talking about Big Ten. Was it
Big 12?
Big 12.
No.
Was it Big Ten, Big 12? Yeah, I think it was Big Ten, Big 12, which could add, like, give me Texas next year. Although,
well, I guess we have them in 2 weeks.
I'll go in one week.
That's true. I'll throw the floor back to you guys as I continue to go 75 on the highway here and let the people who actually watch the game talk about the game.
Yeah, what I'll say is that if regarding to the good taste in the mouth here is that I'm pretty sure, like, we'll probably always look back at this game. I don't know about you guys, but I was texting a few people just like, that wasn't a good game. We didn't look like spectacular whatsoever. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, remember how we ended the ACC challenge of Syracuse, destroy them. That's so great. It wasn't a great game.
No.
Yes.
Should probably retire.
Yes, he should. He is about 5 years old. Do you, that comment too, where he was like, if I was 50, I'd be in the NBA. Like, I don't know if the NBA would really want you, Jim. They're not playing the zone up there, but hey, like, as not cool as that win was, I think we just moved up like 4 or 5 spots in KenPom. We're at 16 now. So
I love the KenPom voters.
Yeah, the voters really enjoyed our performance, and they're excited for us to play number one Texas.
What's
in
Maryland at right now?
Days. Maryland is 18th. So,
and what did they have that game at?
They have us losing 74-71. Because it's on the road, but
got it. I think like you get, if we win at Maryland, you'll go into next Tuesday night's game at like a number 2, or as long as Texas takes care of business this week, if we beat Maryland, I'm thinking it's like a number 2 versus probably a top 10 team most likely.
Yeah. And I really hope Houston loses so Texas can be number 1.
And oh yeah.
And then we storm Madison Square Garden.
Nothing
just kidding. We don't storm the court anymore. We're good. We don't do that.
I assume, because you're not talking about it now, and this was I actually had an oh shit moment when I checked the score, because the first thing that I saw was like, it was a video on ESPN of like, crowd goes crazy for Coleman Hawkins triple double. I was like, oh shit, Coleman had a triple double. Like, that's not going to fare very well on this podcast. That's going to create some controversy. I assume that's what we led with, and Johnny was ready to just
let people eat his dust. I was the first one to give credit to Coleman today on this podcast. I was the first one, not Johnny. But when you jumped in, we were talking about a little bit of a podcast one-on-one beef coming out of Vegas there. But we both set our sides.
Doesn't stay in Vegas.
Yeah. Well, but we both gave our statements. I think we're both on the same page now. Done with the trust rankings. Trust rankings don't mean anything. We shouldn't drag our guys, but also like every single player on that team had takeaways to get better coming out of Vegas. And it looks like within the last 2 games, because obviously we didn't have a post Lindenwood podcast, that everything looks good so far, where we're not trusting anyone right now.
I think this is a good time to kind of retire the trust rankings of like, it made sense doing some of the cupcake games, but now it's like, all right, we're playing the big dogs now. And I think this is the perfect time. Maybe you bring it back for the A&M game.
Yeah.
just briefly.
I feel like the purpose of it got like lost in the shuffle. It was, we had a team where we didn't know anyone or what everyone's role was going to be going into the season. And so everyone was starting at pretty much a square one. And like, we needed, like, what I was doing was just being like, all right, Terrence is definitely the guy to start the season. Like, Sky's looking good as our main point guard. Coleman, like, he started off pretty strong, but then he had a couple like not as great games coming off of that. So it's just like, where are we trusting this team? But now, I mean, what are we, 7 games into the season? So like, forget it. You're right.
Yeah, we've seen the team. And I think one thing, too, we should talk about is, like, we're 10th in KenPom in defense. And sometimes that gets lost. It's easier to say, who our good offensive players are, because they're the ones scoring the ball and like adding in the points. But like, it's a little harder for the average fan to be like, hey, good defense there on that possession, and single out who played well and who didn't. But it's a good team. It's a fun team. And I'm excited that this is like our fourth year of like tournament level basketball. We sometimes forget how
where we came from.
It was. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
These seniors and this year have had it well.
They have. And like, honestly, so far, this has been the best non-conference performance we've seen from Brad. Like, we're still only 3 out of the 5 big games through, but I mean, 2021, I guess we really only played like 2 important non-con games, being Baylor and Duke, but we also struggled against Ohio. We haven't had a game like that yet.
Well, that was just because it was the 3rd game in 3 days, and they had an NBA player on
Jason
the roster.
Preston, yes.
We love that guy, and they had another high major player end up transferring. So that one's easy to rationalize away.
I think you're just making excuses.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. But this is a fun – this obviously being in Vegas makes it the most fun non-con of Brad's tenure that we've witnessed. But it was the most impressive before tonight, and we have the opportunity next week to make it even more the most impressive if you win what is in some people's eyes the number one team in the country in Texas.
And last thing, like talking about Vegas, Maddie, you kind of mentioned it on the clip where you read where it's like crowd goes wild after Coleman Hawkins. Another solid performance from the Crush today. I respect that they understood that Coleman was a rebound away from a triple-double, and they gave him the respect that he deserved. Like, it's a really unique thing that you don't see a lot. So I know we're hard on the Crush a lot sometimes. Solid performance.
You went in and out there, but yes. Solid performance. I'm usually hard just because from our perspective, like, I guess they don't pump it into the TV well enough. how loud it is in there, but you see them crossing their arms all the time. Today was not a crossed arm performance. Great job.
Oh, Josh is a big body language reader guy when it comes to college, college student sections. The body language, yes, says it all. So
absolutely.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to put my microphone away from me here. But when I was in Crush, my hands were on my mouth and going the entire time.
Yeah. Well, and how did that work out for us in our 4 years? It
didn't
like
work.
Nice. Okay. So let's try. Let's get some.
That's because I was the only one doing it. And Johnny.
Let's get some
not
fresh blood.
You
were. I was jumping. Okay. Where were you? Where were you junior year? When Malcolm Hill
abroad.
was
senior abroad.
And we were grinding out, two-point wins over Penn State. Where were you? I'll tell you where I was.
Yeah, you were
my
there.
My ass was in the State Farm Center, so thank you. Yeah, that's all I need to hear. Appreciate that. Yeah, that's all I need to hear. Thank you.
Congrats.
Appreciate it. Well, I kind of joined late here, so I feel like I'm intruding. I mean, I don't know. So someone started it, so someone else can end it.
Johnny Ollie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really fun week of Illinois basketball. I mean, in the span of 7 days between the Syracuse, Maryland, and Texas game, we're going to learn a lot about this team. Past the first one, hopefully first conference game, we get up for it, and then we play potentially the number one team in the country. So, a beautiful, ugly game today, and we'll take a win. We'll take a 29-point win. We'll take a triple-double, and we will see you later this week. ILL.